Welcome to Volcano Bake Meat. I'm Grant.
I'm Jessica.
I'm Paige.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Jeff.
This week's episode is Have We Met Before? We're talking about replayability in games. Why do we replay games? What makes a game replayable? What makes a game not replayable? Is replayability dying? All that good stuff.
Also, how many times can we fit replayable into a short paragraph?
Oh, a lot.
Replayable.
Replayable is a replayable word.
Replayable.
Obviously, I think we've all had games that we go back and replay a lot. Part of being a gamer is going back and playing the old favorites. So, I think we've all got that one game or that handful of games that you can't get enough of. So, the question I want to kick off with is, what's a game that you've replayed the most times? And or, what is a game that you'll always gladly replay? You'd never argue with picking it back up. So obviously this would disqualify things like Dota or Overwatch or things like that. Basically, you know, multiplayer games where you're not really replaying it. You're just playing more of it. It's a little bit different.
It's kind of in the design. You kind of have to replay it to play it.
So. Yeah, it's not like you play one game of Overwatch and be like, I'm done.
I've seen all there is to see.
So are we requiring a campaign?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Because I would say that like a game like Tetris would qualify and doesn't really have a campaign.
I might also say things like Destiny qualify because that sort of has a campaign and you can restart with a new character.
Oh yeah, Destiny thrives on replayability.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't replay Destiny, you can't play Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of its flaws. Anyway, I figure we can go around this way. So Jessica, do you want to start?
Sure. So I don't really have a single game, and that's just because, like, I'm sitting here trying to think of what have I played the most times, and that tends to line up with what I would gladly replay. Basically, I'm sitting here counting them up. I know I've played Assassin's Creed, like, I don't even know how many times, same with Fable, same with, like, I haven't replayed Myst too many times, but, like, I replayed Riven and Exile a bunch.
Exile was really good.
It was really good. But weirdly, I think I replayed Riven more.
It was your first one. I replayed Myst the most.
Yeah. And then, like, the Nancy Drew games you can do in, like, 4 hours. So those get done all the time.
Okay, cool. So, Paige, what about you?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. And there are a couple where it's not even I play through the whole thing. But it was a lot of times when I was in high school, these were the ones I would pick up if I didn't want to think for a bit.
Yeah.
And there is Tetris. I did play Tetris so much once that, you know, you could just feel it when you close your eyes. But I think the two that were huge for me were Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, just because that was easy to pick up and play around. If you're doing multiplayer, you could do that. Or I would just pick up one of the Sonic levels and run through that. I had it memorized, so it was calming for me.
I had the same thing. I would sometimes, I'd get home from school and I'd boot it up and I'd do, like, City Escape,
mm-hmm.
Green Forest.
Mm-hmm. Black Forest.
Yeah. And I think there's one other one.
You just wanted to listen to the Escape from the City song, didn't you?
Oh, well, yeah.
True story, New Year's Eve. We did karaoke to Escape from the City. I was sober. But the other one actually was Yoshi's Island. Lots mm-hmm. and lots and lots of Yoshi's Island.
The original?
Island.
That's a good answer. Because I had it on Super Nintendo.
I think it was whatever I had for the GBA.
Okay.
Yeah, they released it on...
Yeah, I think that was a port of the original.
Yeah, I think it was a port of the original. It was a little more challenging for my brain, even though I knew the levels, than Sonic. There was more variety, there was more levels, but each one you could pick it up and do it better. And I think it had enough sameness to be relaxing, and it had enough different to be challenging each time I played it.
Yeah, that wraps up those types of game very succinctly, and why they're so replayable.
Mm-hmm.
Connor, what about you?
You know, actually, I had a lot of notes here for games that I would go back and replay, or games that I would always be willing to go back and replay. I think the more modern answer of Connor, for what he would most likely replay the most, would probably be something like Minecraft. But I went back further and thought, no, what's the game I've really replayed the most? And I think I found it. When I was very young, before I really got big into playing on consoles or anything, which at the time was to say Super Nintendo, Nintendo 64, things like that, I was really into computer games by a developer called Humongous Entertainment.
Oh.
Yes.
How many times has Putt-Putt saved the zoo, Kyle?
How many times did Peppa go to the moon?
Better question.
Yeah.
I wish I could answer that question, because I only ever had Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo.
I wish the audience could see this. When Grant asked that, he was cleaning his glasses, and so he was looking up sinisterly from the biggest chair we've got, like...
The moderator gets the big chair.
How many times have you played that, Connor?
No. Actually, Putt-Putt was not the one I played the most. I was nuts for Spy Fox, who was basically James Bond mixed with the guy from Get Smart, because he was incompetent but suave. I believe the specific title I played the most was Spy Fox. Oh, I can't read the exact title, but it's something with the ozone layer. Operation Ozone, that was the title. Thank you, Paige. Where the plot was, there was an evil pink poodle who she was so obsessed with her hair, she was going to make the entire world beautiful with her own hairspray. So she built a giant aerosol can in space that was just emptying into onto Earth's atmosphere. So it was going to bust a big hole in the ozone layer, and you were all going to die, basically. And what's funny is, despite the fact that I played it pretty much every day for like 3 months, over and over and over again, was... that I really can't remember the plot at all. I probably played it more times than I have any other video game. All I know is it's you start off in a bowling alley, you meet Roger Bohr in the bathroom, and yes, that is his name.
That's a hell of a name.
Yeah.
Well, if it's supposed to be a James Bond send-up, he's yeah. Roger Bohr. It's yeah. Roger Moore.
It's Roger Bohr. Yeah. His assistant is Monkey Penny. She's a monkey. Surprise. You go to Chickle Pichu, which is like Machu Picchu, except it's got gum in it. Because it's... So it makes sense. But Spy Fox was the top, but from the very beginning, Humongous Entertainment had me playing them all day, every day.
Yeah. They did quality stuff.
They did.
And you know what it is? And I feel like they would change certain things each time. Maybe that's just me misremembering, but I feel like each playthrough, they would change slight things about the puzzles.
I think there were a handful of puzzles in their games that were randomly generated. So, I mean, there were usually three or four things, but you still had to be able to figure it out.
Yeah, it was usually something was a different color that you needed, or it was usually, when you think about it from a logic perspective in terms of the actual programming, it was all very simple stuff, but that still made it interesting every time for me as a kid, because every time I knew it was going to be different.
You know, I mean, modern games don't, not all modern games do that. A lot of modern games don't.
Yeah.
So yeah, variation is very important. So, Jeff, BioShock or Baldur's Gate?
BioShock.
Okay.
BioShock, I have played, I think my last count was either 9 or 10 times. That's the first one. I have not played BioShock 2 or BioShock Infinite anywhere near as many times. And I just keep going back because every single time it fires off that particular neuron where it's like, holy cow, I'm thinking and I'm learning and this is an incredible experience. It's BioShock was really interesting for me because it was the first video game that got me to think. You know, like, I'd played Age of Empires, I'd played Warcraft, I'd played a little bit of Baldur's Gate before I got to that, I'd played Halo, but nothing had really gotten my brain going. Not even Myst, not in the same way. That was a puzzler, but it didn't get me to think on a higher level, you know?
It was the first game that made you think on a philosophical level.
Yeah, it was the first game that actually started making me think outside of the game and posing questions to me, so... It really just nailed a specific spot for me, and I've replayed it numerous times because of that. That said, I don't think I can play it anymore. I've played it, you know, 9-10 times, and honestly, this is kind of weird, but it's true. Every single time, it got more and more scary. The very first time I played it, no fear. None whatsoever. I was completely enthralled, and I powered through the whole thing, had a great time. The most recent time that I tried to play it, I got probably to Neptune's Bounty. I couldn't do it. It's just like, no, this is freaking terrifying. And I'm playing games like, you know, Bloodborne and stuff, which are not exactly for the faint of heart.
It's worn you down slowly, like a river through rock.
Exactly. So BioShock is replayed the most times. Game I will always gladly replay because, oddly enough, it's not BioShock. I've got a few answers. Depending on how you look at it, the most honest answer would probably be Faster Than Light. In terms of safe answers for the question, I would say it's actually a toss-up between Brutal Legend and Gears of War.
Really? Brutal Legend?
Brutal Legend, actually. Huh. I've only replayed it a few times, but anytime I think about picking it up again, oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. No.
I'd love to pick it up again.
I know what it is. You mentioned Brutal Legend, and his eyes just kind of light up a little bit, you know?
It takes you back to that special place.
That's true. It is a special place kind of game.
Yeah. I think that's why I'm always happy, like, when I say all the games I've played the most times, you know, you mentioned Fable, and I'm like, yeah.
It's one of those things where you leave it for a long time, but just enough time has passed that you kind of lost that immediate memory and that connection with it. Like an old movie or a children's book or something like that, where once it comes up again, you go, oh, yeah,
Winter
I remember this. This was awesome. And then sometimes you even dip right back in.
Yeah.
I wonder how many times Brutal Legend and Wind in the Willows have fit in the same category.
That's actually a very good question. Probably never. So, Brutal Legend, just because it was a simple game, but it was so beautifully done. It was obviously a labor of love, and it really turned out well, in my opinion. Gears of War, because how can you possibly go wrong with chainsawing your enemy in half? Come on now. Alright, so yeah, those are my answers for games I would always gladly replay. There are a couple others that I thought of, Fallout New Vegas being one of them, that I have to mention Dota. I have to mention Dota. Also, Bloodborne, I've spent more and more time in that. Yeah. I just keep going back to it.
You're already on your second playthrough.
Well, there are people who play through that game 8, 9, 10 times, just keep doing the new game plus and getting it more and more difficult.
Oh, no, I know. I just mean, like, you only recently finished it the first time and you already dipped right back in.
Yeah. It's just a simple game. And it's an incredibly complex game, but for me, it's a simple joy.
Yeah.
And honestly, probably Brutal Legend, Gears of War.
Alright. Well, for me, I think game I've replayed the most times...
Where's the bell? Go for it.
Game I've replayed the most times, the easy answer is Metal Gear Solid. The first one, or the Twin Snakes. So the GameCube remaster of the first Metal Gear Solid takes the cake. Not only because I play through that franchise a lot, and I have done so throughout my life, but I recall in particular one winter break in middle school when I did not have a whole lot to do, and so I just sat there and I replayed Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes pretty much constantly throughout the entire break. I just kept playing it over and over and over again. I must have played it like 7 times in the span of a week. I don't know why, I just couldn't put it down. I also played 2 intermittently throughout that because I had that handy, but 2 is also not as good. It's weird, because I wouldn't put it in the same box as Brutal Legend for Jeff, or Fable for Jessica, where my eyes light up when I think about it. I mean, I love Metal Gear Solid, but in a different way. It's a more serious love. I don't know, just, it almost got to the point where it was kind of relaxing, that it was a game that I could just play through, and it's almost more like how Spy Fox was for Connor, where even now, I could play through Twin Snakes in my sleep. I know all the shortcuts, I know exactly the right order for everything. I could skip all the cutscenes and just run from point A to point B and remember how to do everything. And it's relaxing to go through and play it again.
Well, it's relaxing to be good at something. When you can just know, I will put this in, I will pick up a controller, I will know what to do. It's the opposite of having the anxiety when, like, you pick up a game and the controls don't gel with you at all and you feel like you're crap at it. But when you pick it up and you just fall into sync, you feel a little like Neo in The Matrix.
Yeah, and I think specifically with this particular game, for me, especially now, it's almost like going back to your old high school,
mm-hmm.
where everything feels a little weird because you haven't been there in a long time. There's a familiarity to it that I really, really enjoy. In terms of a game I'll always gladly replay, I have to say Torchlight 2.
Yeah.
Really, any Diablo clone, I could just as easily say Diablo 2, because I will also gladly play Diablo 2, but I feel like Torchlight 2 is what all of the people who are still playing Diablo 2 wish Diablo 3 had been. But really, any loot grinder. Diablo 2 or 3, Torchlight, Path of Exile, Borderlands, any of those loot grinder type games, I will always be game to pick up and play. And it's kind of like with Bloodborne, it's a simple joy.
Yeah.
I jump in, and even if it's a particular game I've never played before, I understand the basic idea. I click on what I want to die, I allocate my points, I get my cool new abilities, I can compare the loot, and I get to blow stuff up and shiny stuff flies out, and it makes me better. Yes, but yeah, for me, I think any loot grinder, but I'm going to say Torchlight 2, that's the meter stick that I think any loot grinder I play gets held up against. So yeah, I think we've got a pretty wide idea of the different reasons something can be replayable, which I think is really cool. So, the first question that I think is worth talking about is, why is replayability so important to a game? And at the end of the day, is replayability all that important to a game?
Well, I think one of the simplest ways to answer that question is return on investment.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Games that are replayable, meaning games you can go back and replay the campaign with different choices, or maybe there's, like, actual new things that happen each time you play it, or maybe it's just it's so quick and fast and consumable enough that you will want to replay it again just to experience the ride again, like, you know, getting off the roller coaster, running back and getting on the roller coaster, is that you're only paying for one game, but it feels like you're getting multiple uses out of it, right?
Yeah.
As the economics guy, my first thought was value, how much entertainment you're getting per dollar you spend.
Yeah, and I think that there's something even beyond that, where yes, when you're looking at a game and you know one has replay value and one doesn't, you will probably go for that one. But I think there's also goodwill involved, where if you make a game that's replayable, it's because the player gets joy when they go back to it. I mean, yes, there are some games that I will not replay, but were still really good. I don't feel like going through Walking Dead again right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
But most games that I think are replayable is because I had a blast playing it, where I got through and I was like, let's go again. And I think when you have a game like that, it's also not only a good return on investment for that first sale, but if you have a game company where they're like, oh, they made that game that you've sunk 3,000 hours into, I'm going to buy their next game.
I will buy pretty much anything Edmund McMillan makes at this point just because of how much I got out of Binding of Isaac.
Oh, Binding of Isaac.
Yeah, yeah. Binding of Isaac and the guys who made Rogue Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing they make, I'm on it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I would say that, in general, I do feel that having replayability in a game is important, even if it's a game that I personally will never replay, or, you know, like, none of us at this table would ever replay. If we can just say, like, this game has replayability, it is a good game in a lot of ways. And I say that because there are games like, for instance, I love The Witcher. I still have not finished my first playthrough of The Witcher, but I already know I will replay it when I'm done with it, right?
Right, like, savor it.
Yeah, and I don't know when that second playthrough will happen, seeing as it's taken me a year to get to the point of haven't finished the first playthrough, right? But games like The Walking Dead, or really any Telltale game that we've all played, I think we could all say at some point it would be nice if we got to a point where we would want to, like, where we have the mental energy to replay those, right?
Yeah.
You know? Like, I will totally replay The Walking Dead someday.
Exactly.
I don't know when that day is.
Yeah.
But because I want to revisit those stories, those characters, those moments, right, that gameplay, whatever it is, I think it's very integral to a game to have some form of replayability, even if that's someday I will come back to you.
What you nailed it when you said a game has value. And there are kind of two different types of value a game can have. One is literal value, which is kind of to the point of return on investment.
Dollars per hour.
Yeah, a game that you play more, you feel like you got your money's worth out of it. Literal, you know, actual monetary value. But there's also personal value. If you and Grant, you and I bought a game for $60, but it was way up your alley in terms of the style, the gameplay, the story, everything else, and for me it was just not, you're going to feel like that game was worth $60. I won't. So there's something to say for what a game personally means to someone in terms of value, and that, I think, you can kind of exchange the words important and valuable in that sense. Like, for example, for a lot of people, building relationships with the characters in a game like Mass Effect or The Witcher, or even games like The Wolf Among Us or Walking Dead, where you do focus so much on
the characters. That's the entire appeal of
the entire appeal
games,
is you build those relationships. Like, that's a key point of value for a lot of people, and that's why those games get replayed so often, even though for a lot of them they only end one way, really. There are a few different ways it can go, but narratively it's the same thing every time. What makes it valuable is every time you go back in, you get to be back, live those relationships again, you know, be with those characters, talk to them again, maybe even talk to them in different situations and get to see different sides of them, and that in itself has value. So really, you can even extend that out to all the different other aspects of a game, whether it's gameplay or level design, sound even. If you just like, I've played many multiple games just for the soundtrack, Jet Set Radio Future.
And I think it's interesting that at least from what I'm hearing, we're getting two things out of why games are replayable. And one is because you're going to get something different out of it, where you can go on different paths, you can explore something you didn't do before, you can do something better, you can get the better ending, you can do New Game Plus, whatever. And the other thing is sameness. We are getting two opposite things out of replayability, and we are looking for different things. Because when I went back and played Sonic 2 Adventure Battle, it's not because I was going to find an extra path that Sonic hadn't gone down before, because it was a really simple game, but it was because it was comforting the same way Chicken Noodle Soup is comforting. It's comforting the same way Parks and Rec is comforting for me. Humans have this category in brain of stuff that makes things okay.
Yeah. No, the comfort place, the happy place. It's why I watch Disney movies to this day that I have seen hundreds upon hundreds of times.
Your secure base.
Yes, the secure base. You go back to these characters, these people, these levels, what have you, right? Like, I'm just like, oh, good God. I loved Super Mario Advance 2 on the Game Boy Advance. Uh-huh. I know those levels so well that, like, I picked it up recently, and I don't remember most of the game, but I do remember where all the shortcuts are, because I replayed that one so many times.
So let me take us in a slightly different direction to a game that does not make you feel great, to a game that really makes you feel kind of awful, and I really feel like I should replay it, I want to replay it, but anytime I even think about it, I just start to shudder a little bit. Spec Ops The Line.
That's right, because previously you've said that game was very, very good.
Oh, it was excellent.
And deeply disturbing.
Yeah, the mechanics were, I'll admit, not great. They were...
No, but that wasn't the point.
Yeah, that wasn't the point. It was a pretty standard third-person shooter. No one will ever do it better than Gears of War did, really. But the point that it got across was something very different, one that I don't want to go into right now. The point that I want to bring up, I really feel like I should replay this game, because I know there is a lot more there that I can get on a second playthrough. There is more for me to dig into, more for me to understand, more for me to learn about the characters, but because of what I know is going to happen, because I know it's going to be the same in those crucial ways, no thank you, I'll take a pass.
So it's like Old Boy.
And it's interesting. It is exactly like Old Boy. And the thing is, it's really interesting, because sometimes I can't replay that. Is a huge compliment.
Yeah.
Because it says, you did what you meant to do, you hit me in the way you meant to, and that is why I can't see you ever again. While sometimes it means, this game is really good, except that one thing.
Yeah.
And that is not a compliment.
Yeah, we're veering into another thing I want to talk about, of what makes a game worthy of being replayed versus what makes a game that you finish and know you'll never pick up again. And what Paige just mentioned, I like to call the meat circus effect.
The meat circus effect.
Anybody who's played Psychonauts is a fantastic, fantastic game on so many levels.
And if you haven't played it, you should.
You really should.
And I say this because I know for a fact Connor has never played Psychonauts.
I've never played Psychonauts.
Okay.
I don't think Paige has played Psychonauts
either. Little into Psychonauts.
But the reason I bring it up at all is because Connor has said to me before that, like, he keeps wanting to pick up Psychonauts. And he'll, like, start it even? I think I've seen him start it. But then he'll go, but I'm a little scared of the meat circus.
You made it sound pretty damn bad.
Honestly, Connor, you should be afraid of the meat circus.
You should be afraid, but know that it is a challenge you can, in fact, overcome.
And here are two people who have survived the meat circus.
And you know how bad I am at platformers.
And we're relatively well-adjusted human beings afterwards, so.
That's true.
Mostly.
Now,
relatively.
Like, about equal to before.
Yeah.
Like, the meat circus is like your first breakup. It's horrible, it hurts, and you want to die on the inside. And you
blood,
and
screaming.
And you feel like, and you just feel like you'll never be okay again. But then one day you
the
wake up.
Got cold.
And you
realize.
The crap out of a bunny.
Yeah, but then one day you wake up and you realize you didn't think about the meat circus at all yesterday. And then it's the beginning of the rest of your life. And you'll be okay. You'll be stronger for it.
Yeah,
that's what the meat circus is.
And quite frankly, after the meat circus, there have been several other games I've played where I've gone, it's not as bad as the meat circus. And
it's
I've gone through it, right?
Yeah, like sometimes I get really mad at video games, and sometimes I let that get to me, but sometimes I stop and I go, I did the meat circus. I can do that.
Well,
and I can do this. And then it helps me get through.
So the meat circus effect, really, if a game loses its replayability due to the meat circus effect, you could say then that it's really because it's just this very challenging component of the game.
Or but not broken in the, part of a game.
That's the thing. It's not just challenge. If it was challenge,
if it was
that'd
challenge,
be one thing.
That would be Dark Souls. And that's the Dark Souls effect.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
if it's Meat Circus, it's a great game.
Except this one part really sucks.
One part.
Well, okay. And sometimes it's not even this one part really sucks, but it's this one part is a completely different game that somehow got stuck in the middle of my game.
Exactly.
I would say Legend of Zelda. You would probably say Final Fantasy XV, but those games that have a random
stealth segment, yeah.
Games that have a random stealth segment where you're punished for doing the things that you would normally do, and all of your weapons are stripped, so suddenly you are powerless and frustrated.
I actually have Forsaken Fortress written on here.
Yeah. Those will make it very difficult to go back.
And actually, I have another great example of that, and it's kind of a tragic one, because everything else about this game makes it perfect for replayability. You can go at levels from different angles, use different abilities and equipment, the story's good, the character interactions are good, but in Deus Ex, Human Revolution, amazing game. I loved it. It's honestly one of the best games I think I've ever played, except for the boss battles.
No. Which is why you should play the Director's Cut.
Yes. No, they went back and they fixed it. I haven't tried it with the Director's Cut yet.
Much better.
But for those who are...
And honestly, it's because they were broken that I haven't gone back to the Director's Cut. Even though I hear it's so much better. It's like, but then I'd have to replay it and trust that they actually fixed it.
Exactly. You've been burned once. So yeah. there's an aversion to it. But
and
for
we
those
got
of you,
burned so hard.
Yeah, for those of you who weren't aware, in Deus Ex Human Revolution... The boss encounters, of which there are probably like four or five.
There are four.
The boss encounters were outsourced to another developer. So they weren't actually designed by the same company that made the rest of the game. So what you got was the bigger chunk of Deus Ex, which was, you know, sleek and well-running and cool and fun. And then these boss segments that were just this complete disruption of the balance that the game had up
cool.
until then.
And each boss fight was really easy if you had this one mod.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if you didn't have the one key to that boss fight, it was impossible.
Yeah, not only was it broken from just a pure gameplay, this is too hard, in that it's not challenging, it's just not... It's almost impossible.
Yeah.
But it's that the way they designed it was completely counter to the way the game taught you how to play
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Especially since, like... So, I actually, idiot that I am, when I did go back and replay Deus Ex Human Revolution, I played the standard non-director's cut version, so... And I went through, and I realized more definitively what the issue is they expected you to essentially play as though... Well, basically, they assume you play what I like to call loud and proud in a stealth game.
Yeah.
Right? So, they expect you to, like, have a lot of, like... You know, stealth and toughness things with the typhoon thing built in so that you're, like, burst in through the door, whip the grenades around, and then, like...
Just start shooting.
Blast them with your, like, sound...
The boss fights were designed
body.
For a shooter game.
Yeah, they were designed for a shooter.
And Deus Ex is a lot more than just a shooter. I realize we didn't went through all this, we didn't actually define the Meat Circus effect.
Sorry, continue.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
I mean, it's when you don't want to replay a game because there's a little part of it.
Yeah, no, there's an otherwise really good game that there's the one part where when you think about replaying it, you go, oh, but I have to do that. And yeah, for me, Psychonauts, it's the Meat Circus. I get a little dicey about Wind Waker because of the Forsaken Fortress.
It is Forsaken.
And the third act where you have to collect rupees for 3 hours.
Well, and I think it's interesting, the Meat Circus effect, as we're defining it, is not you gave up on a game.
No, it's you did it, and you never want to do it again.
Because I think this is the difference for Kingdom Hearts, at least as it stands right now, for me and for Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the middle of Kingdom Hearts, there is a level where you go underwater. You go to the Little Mermaid world.
Wait, Atlantis?
Atlantica.
Okay. And it's horrible, because at one point you have to grab onto a moving dolphin after defeating all of the enemies in an area who regenerate... While part of your world
it was under the sea.
Under the sea.
It's under the sea on
the
loop.
Little like yeah, the replays endlessly. And I know that for that and a couple other reasons I won't replay Kingdom Hearts 1 anytime
horrible.
Soon.
It's actually kept me from watching The Little Mermaid again, and as I mentioned earlier, I watched all my favorite Disney movies at like hundreds of times. It's been a while.
And that's what caused, like, that's where Jessica quit.
That specific scene.
So I'm wondering, what are people's thoughts of what takes something from just the quit level to the meat circus, I will not replay this level?
The way a game can sort of survive with the meat circus effect, which is to say have a section or component of it that is so difficult and painful, and yet people would come back to replay it, is there has to be something that comes after that part that is rewarding enough to be worth it.
I mean, I think that's actually a fair point, because if there was something cool afterwards, then you'll power through, like, oh, that sucked, but this is really cool, and you'll keep going. Whereas if there isn't necessarily that, you might just drop it. Yeah. And I don't know if that necessarily applies, because everything after Atlantica and Kingdom Hearts is awesome, though. So.
Part of it might be you have to kind of know what's coming. Because it's not always possible to know what's going to come next in a game. In fact, that kind of almost ruins the whole point. But I think a game has to, you know, scale you up and keep you entertained and keep you motivated up to that point to make you believe that if I get through this, I'll have more of what I've been getting, and I want more of that.
They have to earn your goodwill.
Exactly. So you have to trust that what's going to come after this is going to be worth all this pain and suffering. If they fail to do that, then what's the point? Just quit. You've already gotten your worth out of it, emotionally, well, and probably, you know, monetarily, if you want to actually configure that into your decisions.
Well, and I think it goes back to physics.
Inertia is a property of matter.
Inertia is a property of matter. And the thing is, when you are playing a game, you are already in motion. When you are going through the meat circus the first time around, you're saying, oh, this sucks, but I've gone so far, I better keep going. Well, when you're already stopped, when you're not moving, it is harder to get in motion. And you're thinking, oh, it'd be great to go back to do this and this and this, but... And that keeps you from playing instead of keeps you from going forward.
And that's interesting because I think my two examples, at least, of Psychonauts and Wind Waker both do that in different ways. Because Psychonauts, you've got that inertia, you hit the meat circus. If I recall correctly, I'm pretty sure meat circus, or at least that particular part of meat circus is the whole final level. But the particular part of Meat Circus that people hate is leads straight into the final boss, I think.
It does.
I don't think there's any breaks. It's just that's like the first stage of the 3-stage final boss.
Yeah, no, it leads right in, and it's actually a pretty quick segment, because, like, once you finish that... once you finish it,
yeah,
it goes by, and suddenly the game's over.
Yeah, no, like, you jump into, like, I think it's Little Oli, then the other platforming bit, and then the final boss.
Yeah.
So your inertia's still going, you punch through, and then you get to the next platforming bit, and you're like, ugh, more platforming, but that one's not as hard. It's difficult, but you can see that it's attainably difficult. And then it just speeds through, and you're done with the game. So you don't have time to screech that halt of fuck the meat circus. Whereas with Wind Waker, I personally got just really frustrated at not just the rupee collection, but having to deal with Tingle.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, just like having to look at Tingle.
I don't know if anyone likes looking at Tingle.
Yeah, having to look at Tingle also drained it for me. But the Triforce collection bit, before that, you've already gotten to go back to the Forsaken Fortress and fuck it up, which is incredibly cathartic. And you've had probably my favorite part of the whole game, possibly my favorite part of Zelda as a whole, when you first pull out the Master Sword and you fight the room of, like, 15 knights all at once. And just the game has made you feel that power at that point. And so they've bought my goodwill, where I'm like, okay, this is obnoxious, but once I do it, I'll get to go fight Ganondorf. And if I'm replaying the game, I know that the final battle is also fucking awesome. So they're getting me from both sides on that one that makes me willing to push through that segment.
Well, and I wonder if it's any different just... Because both that, the meat circus, and actually the stealth level Final Fantasy XV are all at the beginning or end of the game, while Atlantica's smack dab in the middle.
That's actually a very good point.
No, and that, I think, for me, the games that I tend to, like, quit as opposed to become my meat circus, if you will, are the ones that they haven't earned the goodwill whatsoever, right? Like, and it's usually... in the middle of the game. Now, Kingdom Hearts is an interesting example because, for me, Kingdom Hearts is the game that, as a child, I always wanted to play, but I didn't have a PS2, and I didn't know anybody who had a PS2 that would be willing to lend it to me.
Right.
Right? Like, so getting to play Kingdom Hearts is still, like, the long-awaited dream, and I think that's the only reason I have pushed through where I have and will eventually sit back down and fucking finish my playthrough. But, like...
And then you'll play Kingdom Hearts 2 and everything will be better.
That's what everyone says. Yeah, no, like, for me, it just... It didn't really earn that goodwill to make me believe. And even though I know, because everyone tells me, right, like, that it will get better.
So, let's put the meat circus aside. What are other reasons why you might not replay a game even if you enjoyed it? I personally... we mentioned Telltale.
We did.
And Jessica said you eventually want to have the energy to go back and replay a Telltale game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I'm ever going to go back and replay a Telltale game. Part of it is I can't bear to see those people die again in the case of The Walking Dead. but I think for me, and I think it's part of the reason why when I go back and replay like Mass Effect, I inevitably find myself making the same choices again. I feel like replaying a Telltale game is kind of cheating.
I don't know. For me, it's like rereading your favorite book. Right? Like, I feel like I will someday get to a point where I'm going to want to go back, and I actually feel that might be pretty soon in the case of The Walking Dead. Just, I don't know, anyone who knows me knows that I go back to the things over and over and over again, especially TV shows, movies, books. Like, I just, like, I like the comfort of knowing what's coming, so... And then, like, with Telltale in particular, because I could potentially make a different decision... On top of that, that adds that extra layer of, ooh, I want to go back.
But the thing about Grant is that for, you know, and I kind of understand this because I'm kind of the same way, is the connection to the character in this kind of game is not quite, this is a Shepherd or this is a Lee. This is my Shepherd or this is my Lee. And so, like, it almost feels like you're going into, like,
there's dissonance.
This is an overdramatic way of saying it, but you're going into somebody's head and scrambling it by making different decisions.
Well, and I think the other thing, in the case of Walking Dead in particular, in Telltale games in particular, there is weight and there is consequences to your actions. And if I'm going to go back and replay Walking Dead, I'm actually thinking specifically of Season 2. Specifically the end of Season 2.
Yeah.
I'm going to be compelled to make a different decision than the one I made because of the information I have that I didn't have when I first made a handful of those decisions. And that feels disingenuous to the experience. I think part of what made a handful of decisions in Season 1, but especially in Season 2, so impactful was that you made the decision when you didn't have all the info, and then you find out more of the info later, and that changes things.
But to me, that's almost an exciting aspect of it. What decisions do you make when you have the information?
It's exciting, right? But is it? And it's exciting, but is it counter to the way the developers intended it?
Or not even the developers intended it, but how the character would experience it.
That too.
Well, I think even more than that is, are you really going to enjoy it? When you know what the right choice is, when you know when you go back and play...
Oh, there's
no right choices in The Walking Dead.
But that's not the point. The point is when you know that if you go back and do this again, you're going to choose differently because you're going to be compelled to choose differently. Is that really going to feel good? It might not. Possibly because when you played through it the first time, even though the decision may have hurt, even though it may have been like it drained you in terms of your energy, mental energy, emotionally, if you were to back and go through it again... It just wouldn't hit you the same. You'd know that you still did that first decision, and that was the real one.
I think for me, the reason I would want to replay a Telltale game specifically Walking Dead or Wolf Among Us are the two that jump into my head as being ones that I have to replay at some point, are the same reasons Jeff replays Bioshock. It's a philosophical experience of, mm-hmm. like... Nietzsche claims, you know, like, quoting, Nietzsche has that theory that, like, we have lived this moment 1,000 times before and we'll live it 1,000 times again, right? But we don't know that, right? Like, there is no way for us to know the life we are going to live and then have that experience coming into this moment sort of thing. In a like, Telltale game, you can know going into it, and how will that affect it? I want a Bill Murray, man. Like, I want to know what the day is going to bring, knowing what's going to happen at the end of it. And you can't, like...
And I think it's interesting that games as an art form are mature enough now that we have got the meta conversation going on about it, not just, us sitting around talking about games, but if we look at games like The Stanley Parable and Undertale, especially.
I was going to bring up Undertale.
Actually,
yeah, game developers are Stanley starting to, yeah, no, but, I mean, both that, of them.
That's another one I will always gladly replay. Now yeah. I want to play Stanley Parable.
But, I mean, both of them, and, you know, Undertale specifically calls out your, I haven't played Stanley Parable, and actually, I haven't played Undertale, but both of them, I know Undertale specifically calls out when you play something differently than when you, you know, you play
yeah,
it before.
Undertale keeps your save file, but it also keeps a hidden save file in the back that it knows what you've done on previous playthroughs. So if you, like, if you've gone through and you kill the character on a particular playthrough, when you go through again, their dialogue will be different because they will remember you killing them. And it's actually, if you do a full genocide playthrough where you kill everybody, and then go back again and do a full pacifist playthrough where you save everybody, at the very end, the game says no. They say, no, fuck you. You killed everybody, and you can't wash your hands of that fact. And the ending is actually slightly different. Even if you got the best ending, it's slightly different if you've ever done genocide.
That's jarring.
Yeah. It's, yeah, it is, like, there are ways to erase it, but you have to, like, go in and, like, mess with... It is an irrevocable decision to do that, which is actually why Undertale is a game that I loved. I don't know if I'll ever replay it, because I got the perfect pacifist ending the first time through. I painstakingly made sure I got the true pacifist ending my first playthrough, because I don't think I could have... I couldn't bear to kill any of those characters, and I could not bear to go through and be like, let's see what happens if I kill Undyne! Blam! Like, no. I'd have to, like, go take a long walk after that.
And this kind of touches on something that I think games actually share in common with books or movies or other mediums that people might consume over and over again, or not feel like they need to consume over and over again, and that is playing through a game again, whether it's to make a different decision or experience the same characters over and over again. Another thing that replayability allows us to do is build on our existing experiences and beliefs and kind of experiment, right? So maybe it's not that you'd want to play through The Walking Dead again just to, you know, do the right thing, but maybe it'd be like, I feel like I would make this decision, but I wonder how I would feel if I did this. You know, it's not just... Because most people think... People default to when you play through a game that has multiple decisions like that and different trees that it can go down, that you just want to see what happens. Well, I'm just curious. What will happen if I do this? What happens if I do this? But I think where that's really valuable for a lot of gamers is on a more personal level, where it's like, I wonder how I'll feel if I do this. Because at the in the moment, myself, like my identity currently, compelled me to do this. But what happens if I do that? What happens if I don't spare this person? Or what happens if I do go this way? How will I react then?
Who do I become?
Yeah, exactly. It's, who am I then? And that happens with books, too. Catcher in the Rye, when you're 15, is incredibly different when you're 25. If you go back and read it, you're going to think differently and react differently, most likely.
Well, and I think it's interesting, actually, just going... We have a listener, Jeff. Hey, Jeff. He does another podcast, Pod of Thrones, if you want to listen to that. But he is very active on our Reddit community. And once when we did the episode about player choice, I think he called us a bunch of goody two-shoes. Cause,
oh, yeah. Because he always goes full renegade.
Uh-huh.
And, you know...
And he goes as dark as the game will let him go on his first playthrough. Just to see what the game is capable of. And so I think it's interesting... Both running the developers through the paces with replayability, but also seeing a very different world than what he experiences and seeing how he lives in that.
Yeah, it might be he's testing it to see, can you bother me?
Well, and even just like, I mean, yeah, I think he called us goody two-shoes because I think Grant and I mentioned how much it bugs us to, like, we'll try to do it and then we can't stomach it.
I can't even do Renegade Mass Effect. I just,
that's pathetic.
I can't. Because
you feel me.
Renegade Shepherd always comes out even meaner than I expect. So it's like, in the first game with the guy who's like, you know, trying to get his wife's ashes, I'm like, you know, trying to be kind of short with him, and it comes out as like being mean to this poor widower, and I'm like, oh no, I'm sorry. No, I feel bad.
So here's kind of how I look at replaying games in, like, the bad way or whatever, right? Like, going as renegade as you can in any particular game is... You know how people say, what would Jesus do?
You say, what would Jesus do, but the opposite?
Yeah.
What would Jesus do?
Well, let's just do the opposite. What would the Antichrist
what wouldn't
do?
Jesus
yeah, what would Jesus definitely not do?
Yeah. No.
And I think,
my first playthrough is, what would I do? My second playthrough is, what would Mean Me do?
The goofus and gallant approach.
Yeah, right? And then if there is a third playthrough, that's usually the E. Like, okay, now what would I do if I were trying to be a goody two-shoes? Because I generally think that I'm pretty good, but I can get, like, I get short with people.
Well, and it's interesting because then, you know, what he said is he was disappointed because you could tell that when they do the renegade, you don't go that dark in a lot of games. And so it's interesting because you can kind of, by replaying, see where the developers are at. And to some degree, that's probably, you know, where the, you know, marketers are at, like, Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, you play as the bad guys for half the campaign, but then they turn into the good guys by the end and everything's fine, and then the birdies sing and Dr. Robotnik is nice for 5 minutes before he goes back to his animal thieving ways, but...
You all rock out to live and learn.
Yes, you do. But, I mean, I said before he puts the developers through their paces, but you also see where they're comfortable with. Not only where are you comfortable with, but where are they comfortable with. And so you kind of, by replaying, you learn more not only about the game, but also the people who made it.
And actually, going back to the Undertale thing, and you know, I haven't played it myself either, but, like, just that thought of, if you ever go full genocide, you will never be able to wash that off.
Yeah,
right?
No, like, you're...
And that's where the developers were with that one, or
the developer.
Or,
the developer,
sorry,
yeah.
I said as, like, they asked and I realized I was wrong, but... For the developer, that was something that, like, oh, you can go that dark, but you're going to regret it.
Exactly. That's exactly what the idea was.
I think another good example of that, now, I haven't played this, I talked with a friend about this, so forgive me if I'm wrong, in the first Fallout game, like, the original Fallout.
That was, like, isometric, like, top-down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Predating Baldur's Gate. You've seen me play a little bit of Baldur's Gate. You could kill kids.
Yeah.
You could kill children. And if you did, no one would talk to you. Shops wouldn't sell to you. You would have groups hunting you down.
Really?
Yeah. You were vilified.
You were just a villain for life.
Across the... I mean, for that playthrough.
Yeah.
But no one. The game was not completable if you killed a kid.
Really?
Because the people who you needed to talk to would be like...
Yeah, the key NPCs wouldn't talk to you.
Yeah, they'd be like, no, I'm not talking to a kid killer. It's... Which I think is a really strong thing.
That's a strong message to send, yeah.
Yeah.
So
a controversial message of do not kill children.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're going in a really interesting direction with the discussion, which is how replayability kind of tells us a bit about the people who actually made the game. Like, what were they going for?
That's a good point.
Stuff like that, and especially with, like, Undertale and Toby Fox.
I would love to just sit down and talk with Toby Fox for an hour.
It'd be hilarious if you did.
I'd buy him a beer.
He was just really uninteresting and boring and just wanted to talk about, like, normal things. And you're like, that was uneventful.
Can we talk about basketball?
No, that would be it.
No.
Just, like, I mean, he doesn't do interviews, but the interview I heard was actually the guy just offering to let him do an email and then do text-to-speech.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and Toby Fox went for it because he thought it was kind of funny. He was a very thoughtful guy, and he's not just doing it because it's like, what if it's, you know, it's an interesting approach to games. He was doing it because he has always been deeply bothered by how video games operate with these things. I mean, love video games, but disturbed.
Yeah, but that even kind of goes into, like, what Mass Effect did. And now, don't get me wrong, Mass Effect is, I think, an incredibly rich game, especially with the character interactions and how you can make decisions. It's one of the most famous ones, if not the most famous one by now, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like quite a lot of Shepard's decisions in terms of whether they were Paragon or Renegade, let's just keep it to that, keep it simple, sometimes they were gimmicky.
Oh, they were very gimmicky.
Sometimes
and
they were gimmicky.
A lot of them were gimmicky. I'd say most Renegade or Paragon
didn't really make that much of an impact.
And it was really, a lot of the Renegade decisions I felt were just thrown on because they wanted to have the Paragon option and then felt you should probably have a Renegade option to counteract this. So
I'd
you'd have
say...
your neutral, and then if you had high enough charisma, you could Paragon. But all right, we should probably add a Renegade thing in here.
I'd say that's true until the third one. In the third one, they really upped the ante on what you can do as a Renegade, and I think that's important to keep in mind.
I think up to that, though, and I don't want to accused Mass Effect developers of doing this. In fact, I would sternly believe that they did not do this. But I think quite a few game developers who have that same sort of mechanic in games, where they almost try to force replayability on the players, like, oh, you can do all these different things and make different decisions and go different ways and buy different color shoes. looking at you, Pokemon. It's because they notice that games like Mass Effect, or, I mean, maybe even Spy Fox, or other games that had that effect built in, where you could go through and experience different things, or go through and experience the same thing but differently, we're like, ah, we can add this to our games, and people will keep playing them. And we'll get more, you know, lifetime value out of it. We can just, you know, make it seem like it's a deeper game than it really is. I'm trying to think of some other examples of games that may have done that kind of, I don't want to say it, it's not the right word, but shamelessly. But the point is, at some point, replayability became marketable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it sold copies.
Oh, I know. And that's actually something I experience at work every day, is the question I get asked a lot about a game is, what's the replay value?
Well, especially because if they're in your unnamed retail location, they're probably paying full price for a game.
Well,
so if you're going to throw down $60 in a game, I want to get lots of time out of it.
Either full price, or if they are buying it, like, pre-owned, I don't know, I still get a lot of, do you think this has good replay value, even when it's pre-owned and cheap?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I have people who don't want to pick up Quantum Break because they're not convinced they'll want to replay it. And that's another case of, you can make all these choices. And you can, and I think that will change the game overall, and I've heard that it does change the game, but I haven't wanted to replay it since I finished it. Same with Until Dawn. I want to go back to Until Dawn someday, but
I kind of feel the same.
That game was another, here are all these choices you can make, it'll totally alter the game for you. But it doesn't.
And Until Dawn, though, I would say is slightly different, because the point of Until Dawn is that it's an integrated story. You literally walk around and live the story. You know, it's not as dynamic as some other games might be that just happen to have a story as part of the structure. So I think, I mean, that can be a bit different in that, well, I kind of want to know what happens with this telling of the story. But at the same time, I do agree with you. I haven't really felt compelled to play it again. Because
yeah.
I felt like what we got was as close to the best version of the story we could get. Kind of like based on what you were saying, Grant, about, like, I know if I went back, I'd choose the different thing. And I'm not sure if it would hit me the same way.
Well, and I think it's interesting just that the reasons we replay games have become more diverse as games have gone on. Because one of the questions in our notes is, are games becoming more or less replayable since the old Nintendo games? You had less stuff to convince someone to buy it. They had to be Nintendo hard and they had to be replayable.
Yeah.
And the way that they would make it replayable, for the most part, was the gameplay. And, you know, a little bit as we grew, we got more story, but now we're getting into choices and morality, and will this feed me intellectually?
Yeah, and yet when we talked about games we replay, we all still mention games where the replaying was solely based on the gameplay. I'm not going to replay Torchlight 2 because I was enthralled by its thrilling story. I'm not going to replay any Loot Grinder because I was enthralled by its thrilling story.
BioShock.
Yeah, but BioShock, I mean, yeah, the gameplay in BioShock is very solid, but you replayed it so many times because you got more and more out of the story.
It was a philosophical
on every playthrough, and I think that's a way that it, you know, somebody mentioned, probably Jessica, of just, you know, the same way that we rewatch movies, rewatch TV, reread books. We, like, Paige and I just finished watching Gravity Falls, and we've already decided we want to go through and watch it again because now that we know how it ends and we know all the stuff, I'm sure if we were to go back and watch it again, we'd see little things like, oh, that's a reference to that, and that's a reference to that, and that's a reference to that.
Yeah.
You get more value out of it. It would kind of mean more.
Yeah, you get more out of it that next time through, and BioShock is definitely one of those. Because of the twist.
Oh, yeah.
Makes at least that second playthrough way more illuminating.
I remember when I first played the first BioShock, I immediately played it again.
Oh, yeah.
Purely because of the twist.
Yeah. The transition from gameplay to story isn't necessarily a transition.
No.
I think it's just another pillar's raising up, but the key question that, thank you, Paige, for bringing into it, because I was about to segue into it, are games becoming more or less replayable over time? Because,
Yes.
old games, they needed to be replayable because there was only so much you had, but I think the video game industry has become so much more corporate-driven and monetarily driven. Are we being encouraged as gamers to move on to the next thing? And something I want to talk about something you don't see very often, and you still see it, but not as often as you did in, like, the SNES days, New Game Plus is disappearing.
You really don't see it.
You don't
anymore.
See it very often. Final Fantasy XV has a New Game Plus. It was added as a patch after the game came out. It sucks balls.
because it was tacked on.
It was tacked on, and here's the thing. Nothing changes. The enemies don't scale up on New Game Plus.
What?
So you drop in, and you're, like, level 60 Noctis hitting level 3 goblins. I'm like, why am I doing... Okay. It's literally just the same game again.
Interestingly, Witcher also has New Game Plus as an add-on. Free download that you can throw on there. It does scale.
Yeah. I think really Witcher 3 in a lot of ways is the example. Yeah, because I also want to talk about DLC, and like Witcher is like being held up as this holy grail of DLC. CD like this is how you do it right.
Yeah. People put Witcher on a pedestal, but that's because it deserves to be there.
Yeah, it really does.
Because she earned it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that answers it is DLC, and actually the other one I want to talk about are things like Disney Infinity or Lego Dimensions, Skylanders. Replayability can be incentivized for manufacturers if they can get more money out of you. Because you're not going to buy the DLC for a game you don't care about. But something like Disney Infinity, which is being shut down, is a bad example. Lego Dimensions, you will keep playing it because they keep giving you new stuff to play, and they will keep giving you new stuff to play because you can give them more money.
I would say, I'm not entirely sure I would count DLC as replaying, right? Unless you... I know there are some cases of, like... For certain DLC, you might want to go back and, like, replay the whole thing. For instance, Witcher's New Game Plus, you might be like, well, clearly...
Yeah, you gotta replay
You gotta replay the game with New Game Plus, but...
Yeah.
And then, like, I do know a bunch of people who, like, didn't necessarily replay the whole thing to do Blood and Wine or Heart of Stone, but, like, there are people who did a full replay through just to get to a good point with that. And then, like, with LEGO Dimensions in particular, you can buy the level sets. They don't affect the main storyline, right? Like, and like you can get the extra figures and so forth, and you can go through the levels because those new characters do unlock new things in those levels, but it's mostly just collectibles, so it's not really playing the story all over again.
No, but it reminds you that it's there, and it gets it off your shelf again.
That's true.
Interesting thing I just thought of, HD remasters.
Yeah.
This generation, we see, and last generation, too, we saw a lot of HD remasters of games, and now that I'm thinking about it, a lot of them were the kinds of games that you aren't necessarily going to go back and play again.
Yeah.
I'm thinking specifically of The Last of Us. The Last of Us was an amazing game, and there's definitely value in replaying The Last of Us, but it's definitely the kind of game that is just a single-player campaign game. You'll go through, you'll play it, you'll say, that was a great game, and you're good to go.
And I know a lot of people were, another game I haven't played, so I'm not totally sure how true this particular thing is, and I know that sucks and I need to get on it, don't remind me. I knew a lot of people who, they brought in that PS3 copy to trade in, and they were like, man, that game was awesome, the ending totally rocked me, I don't think I'm ever going to play this again. Lo and behold,
I mean, that was me. I played it, I didn't actually buy it, I borrowed it from Jeff when he borrowed it, when he worked at an unnamed... video game retailer.
Yeah.
And I played it on my PS3, and I was blown away. And then I was like, I should get that, and I never got around to it because I didn't feel the need to replay it. But then I saw it for cheap on PS4, and I was like, well, took it off the shelf, replayed it again, played the DLC, and then actually the week after, Part 2 was announced. So I was like, yeah! And I'm on the train again for that. But I think a lot of the games that are getting remastered are the kind that you won't necessarily go back and replay, and that's interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm finding it really... fascinating what's getting the remaster too. Like, I know a long time ago now, I did a dumb tweet through our Bake Meat for like Games Time Forgot Voodoo Vince.
Oh yeah,
and then it's getting a remaster. Yeah,
and
it happened a week after
I posted that they announced the remaster.
Well, they obviously got the idea from
clearly.
Here.
Clearly, in all honesty, I really will go back and replay that because that was a really fun platformer that I never finished because I was really bad at platformers then. Still, I'm not very good, but I think I can finish it this time.
Yeah,
I guess so. Yeah, I guess as Paige said, the answer to the question "Are games becoming more or less replayable over time?" is yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I would actually like to amend that a little bit. I think there's a dichotomy. And
there always is.
Well, there always is.
That's why she said,
but
yes, more or less replayable? Yes.
Well, there's a dichotomy in that games are generally going two different directions.
They're diverging, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you either that's have games I mean. Which are super replayable or not replayable at all.
Yep.
And
yeah,
I know we kind of covered that, but I just wanted to specifically bring up a game for me like Bloodborne, where I can play it again and again and again and have a great time. There are people who play it once and are like, all right, nope, we're done, no more. And I just wanted to say that it's really interesting that you can get that radically different response from the same kind of game.
On a similar but different note, there are games that come out every year. We know one big one, Call mm-hmm. of Duty, right? Yep. Like, you get those big, massive people who, like, they're constantly playing that one Call of Duty game, and then as soon as the new one comes out, no one touches that old
one. Everyone migrates.
Yeah.
Everyone migrates. And time only remembers the ones like the very first Modern Warfare.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
World at War was a solid one. That
it was decent.
That
one's remembered because it introduced zombies.
Yeah,
and it has a bit of a cult following and that sort of thing. Obviously, like, the original Call of Duty series as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
One comment I want to make on the whole our games becoming more or less replayable real quickly is if you look at games historically, you know, the industry as it's moved from the 60s and 70s to now, I think there was kind of a dip. In the beginning, replayability was the thing to do, right? As Paige mentioned, Nintendo and Atari and a lot of other game makers had to make their games replayable for them to actually sell and for people to actually want to play them.
You could only fit so much on the cartridge, so it had to be replayable.
Exactly. But I remember there's a fantastic video online. I can't remember the name. I'll try and find it and include it in the show notes later. But it was a quick summary of the history of video games. And what happened in about the 80s-ish was someone discovered, oh, we can just throw a license from a movie onto a game and make a really simple platformer or adventure game out of it, and people will just buy it. So because the level of effort put into it was so low and the price you could sell it for was so high, game makers were making money hand over fist. And they started fighting. That's when Atari and a lot of other developers started fighting over who had the rights to different licenses and to produce certain cartridges. And then it evolved from there. So I think that kind of started this trend of, no, just make a game that's going to sell once and sell a ton of copies. Don't think about replayability. That's kind of an afterthought, right? And then really recently, within the past like 10 years or so, you know, give or take, I think we're seeing this kind of shift back to, you know, gamers are kind of tired of that type of game where it's just a one and you're done. Replayability is back in. And that's kind of where you're seeing both really committed and caring developers like Toby Fox and others make these fantastic games with all this personal value when you replay it again.
Valve.
Yeah, Valve does it well, too. Oh, yeah, with Stardew Valley. A perfect example. And then you have other developers who...
I do mean...
The Curious Ape would be Curious George.
It's true.
Concerned Ape and CD Projekt Red.
Similar but very different. And then you have other developers who, conversely, are doing the replayability thing, but as a purely marketing thing.
Well, and I think... I haven't watched the video, so I don't know if I can answer for it. But the question of whether a game needs replayability is not necessarily dependent on the era, but who's buying the game.
I would agree.
If you are buying a game for yourself as a person who makes decisions at a higher level than shiny colors, you will probably ask if it's replayable. If you're a child who very much is glomming on to things that you like, or possibly someone who hasn't played a lot of video games who really loves a property.
Or shiny colors.
Perfectly acceptable adult life choice, but you'll probably buy the license game.
Candy Crush is so popular.
Or if you are a person buying a game for someone else who does not game yourself, you probably won't ask, is it replayable? You'll just say, oh, my nephew liked E.T., I'll get that game.
Oh.
Yeah, go digging in the desert to find that.
Yeah. I just wanted to actually mention, you specifically were talking about companies that sell replayability as an entire marketing ploy. I just realized we have seen probably the grossest and most flagrant example of that we've ever seen just now with Infinite Warfare.
Have we? Oh, yes, because they included a remaster of
Call of Duty 4 for you to replay.
Which
was a fantastic game, and we've all been clawing for an HD remaster for years now.
So but you gotta play the new one.
So you gotta buy the new one.
Yeah,
they don't care if you play it, they just want you to buy it.
Exactly.
You gotta pay the full ticket price.
Yep.
Sneaky Activision, we're on to you.
Yeah.
So I think we've pretty much covered replayability and what makes it work. Yeah, we might have to replay this later.
Yeah.
But what makes it work and what makes it doesn't and why we all hate the meat circus. But I think that the proper way to send this off with a molasses round would be to replay an old molasses round.
Perfect!
And we were just talking about...
HD remake of a molasses round.
An HD, yes. This is going to be the HD remake of our previous molasses round. We were talking about E.T. and other, game adaptations. So let's go back to our adaptation molasses round.
Oh, no.
Oh,
so what's going to happen is I'm going to name a property, and then someone's going to ruin an adaptation of that property, and we'll just go around until we get bored.
Wow, okay.
So I'm going to start Avatar The Last Airbender, with a caveat, it has to be based on the cartoon. You can't cheap out and go for the Shyamalan movie.
Damn it!
Okay.
Damn.
Can't cheap out and go for the Shyamalan movie. Last Airbender, somebody ruin it.
It's a Kinect game.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Volcano Bake Meat.
Kinect roll back time a bit where it was available on the iToy.
Oh!
Oh! That would actually track timeline wise. The iToy was a thing. Well, actually,
or mash it up, make it a dance game. So you have to dance to popular, like, you know how Just Dance had a Star Wars version.
Do the dancing Han Solo,
Han Solo.
But it's
no.
Dancing I'm Zuko.
Solo. I'm Han Solo. Yeah, just be like, you know, Zuko comes out, he's like, young man. I said, Zuko! And it's the whole YMCA number, but he's firebending to learn.
I'm tragic and scarred!
The Fire Lord!
It's fun to get lots of honor. It's fun to get lots of honor.
Well, then we obviously need...
Sokka has a whole thing about how his girlfriend's the moon.
No, I was thinking, I want to see Sokka do... thrift shop about Macklemore.
I think we need to stop because
we're actually making a really good game.
We're actually making this good.
Okay. So making it laughably, horribly good.
Kinect slash motion sensor.
Kinect Avatar. Awesome. Connor, what are we ruining?
So this medium has already had a few games already.
That's fine. So Avatar.
Yeah, that's true. Avatar had a game. Someone ruined Dragon Ball Z for me.
Well, they already made Dragon Ball Z Kinect.
That's true, you can't go there. Ruin it worse.
Ruin it worse. Oof.
It's a game where it's going through the events of Dragon Ball Z. All the epic battles are happening, all the power levels are rising. Unfortunately, you play as Krillin.
No. Worse. You play as Yamcha.
No. Worse. You play as Yajirobe.
That would be better, because then that'd just be a game where you get to sit around and eat potato chips most of the time.
Fair enough.
And then show up, save the day, and then go back to eating potato chips.
You're right. Yamcha tries and fails.
Yeah.
Better to be Yamcha.
Yamcha.
Good way to ruin it, guys. I actually have
a better way to ruin it.
Okay.
You play a Dragon Ball Z game entirely created by people who only understand Dragon Ball Z at the level of all of their friends really know Dragon Ball Z.
They outsourced it.
Yeah, but they outsource it to people who really don't get it, like me. So you have me write the Dragon Ball Z game, and I'm like, I don't know, someone's named Gohan.
You can be cheap and sell copies. It's going to be on the Switch.
Make sure you give them the hair and...
Here's some bullet points, go.
There's a cat. Yeah, and like... There's something with monkey tails. Just go for it.
Roshi will be the bad guy or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Just like, what?
He looked like a dirty old
Apparently
perv.
There's someone named Roshi.
You did.
I love your idea. Although it may venture into the I would buy that.
I'd buy that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want a game where you are ultra slapstick violent. So let's go Borderlands. Let's go Sunset Overdrive. You are spewing catchphrases, you are cutting down the undead.
Are we still ruining Dragon Ball Z, or are you ruining anything?
Oh, I'm ruining Evil Dead.
Oh, okay.
I want you to ruin Evil Dead for me.
Okay, ruin Evil Dead. Mm. Evil Dead with Silent Hill's combat system.
Oh!
But all combat is through a card game system.
Ooh,
Evil Dead?
I'd play that.
I know.
Evil Dead, but once you lose your arm... Any arm attachments or DLC?
Oh.
Evil Dead, but it's only the first game. You have to pay for the other two movies.
Oh, no. DLC arm attachments.
DLC arm attachments. I don't think anyone's going to top that.
Yeah, I don't think that's good. That's the king right there.
Yeah.
That's the king.
Hail to the king, baby.
Yeah. Hail to the king, baby.
Jack, right. What are we ruining?
All right,
guys. Wait. Actually, Evil Dead... but it's not Bruce Campbell.
Like, you get a really bad Bruce Campbell impersonator?
You get a bad Bruce Campbell impersonator, but worse than that, they also fucked up the character model, so it doesn't even look like him. It's just some
pretty boy.
It's Channing Tatum.
Voiced by Nolan North.
I'm going to go worse. Voiced by Mark Mirren.
Mark Mirren?
Yes.
I was going to say voiced by John St. John.
Okay.
Now that Evil Dead is thoroughly ruined.
I'm going to go for one a bit more simpler. Ruin Star Trek The Next Generation for me.
Yeah.
I would say that you have... You know how some games have... Actually... It's all the war room segments from Dragon Age Inquisition, where Picard is trying to decide what to do on various planets.
Oh.
But your advisors, instead of being like Riker or Data or Worf, you get Deanna Troi.
Okay. Well, Deanna Troi isn't that bad, but continue.
And you get Wesley Crusher. There you go.
I was about to say, Wesley. When's Wesley coming in?
See, I was just going to say... Make the game solely about Wesley. You play as Wesley.
And Yamcha.
And
the Wesley and Yamcha Power Hour.
It's all about Wesley's struggle to, like...
Oh, it's...
Gain recognition.
And to...
And, like...
It's basically...
Be useful.
And to reconcile the fact that his mother is almost dating the captain of his ship and his commanding officer.
And might actually, very well just be straight up boning the captain of the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
I want the genre to be, like, a dating sim.
Yes. Yes.
So you've done to me what I did to Grant.
But, oh, actually, and then to unruin it, actually get Will Wheaton to come back and do, like, the, like... When I was a young man, sort of voiceover thing of like
about Wesley,
which would be horrible but very charming.
It would
and I
be.
Would totally play the shit out of it.
My take: Star Trek Interstellar Racing.
Oh God!
Takes place during the episodes where Riker doesn't have his beard.
And it gleams slightly.
Oh,
His face was so shiny.
All right, done. I don't want a Star Trek game. Thanks, guys. You win.
Jessica, what do we still have to ruin something of Jessica's?
You do. Ruin Samurai Champloo.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah.
Because...
I could ruin Samurai Jack for you.
It would make a great rhythm game, obviously.
Yes. Yeah. Make a fantastic rhythm game.
The obvious answer to Samurai Champloo is give it Arkham Combat, but that would make it amazing. We want to make it terrible.
Could you ruin Samurai Champloo by making it an app like Fruit Ninja, and you're just slicing up dudes?
Guys,
that would still be kind of fun, though.
That would be charming.
Yeah, it's Samurai Champloo, but there is one step in the middle between you and the game. And that step in the middle is called Four Kids.
Oh, so Samurai Champloo as edited by Four Kids?
And made into a bad, you know, 90s cartoon game.
Ah,
yeah.
I see.
And there is an afro shaving minigame.
I feel that we can do better. We can go deeper. How do we ruin... Because at that point, is it really Samurai Champloo anymore?
All right, you're going to ask the same question here. I want to swap it all out with Baroque music.
So they didn't have enough money for a music soundtrack. They just went public domain.
Yep.
No. Well, then I can actually... Don't go Baroque. Just go broke. Like, basically, you just crowdsource it.
Oh,
get
God.
Dudes from the internet to like, write the music for you. You get
the Team Skull song.
No, you get the dudes who think they understand how music works from our mashups.
Oh, no.
To, like, be your soundtrack. It doesn't matter how great the rest of the game is, you will not be able to finish it.
And the script's written by a weeb. By the way, guys, just for the record, the way I would ruin a Samurai Jack game would be not to give you the last level.
Oh,
that's too real. That's too real.
So I think we've made a lot of games here very much not replayable, and covered replayability pretty well. So, listeners at home, why don't you hit us up on social media, Reddit, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. Tell us a game that you replay a lot, why you replay it, things like that. Tell us your thoughts on the matter. And also, if we have any fans in the Seattle area, we have some exciting news. Volcano Bake Meat is actually going to have a panel at Emerald City Comic Con in March.
Yes, we are going to be on their podcast stage, and if the details for the panel don't change in the intervening 2 months until then, we will be on Thursday night at 6:45, and that is on their podcast stage. We will be doing an episode on community and gaming, so that should be a good time.
Yeah, I figure that makes sense when we're in the middle of a large group of gamers. We'll talk about community. So, just keep an eye on all of our social media stuff. If there's anything changes, we'll put it up there. But if you're in the area, and if you're going to ECCC, you should come say hi to us. Maybe we'll have business cards. I don't think we'll have anything to sign, really.
We'll have hugs.
Hugs.
We can bring us things to sign.
Yeah, we can sign your business cards.
I'll sign you.
Yeah, Jeff will sign you.
We can hide you. You can sign me.
Yeah.
Hell, why not?
There you go.
Yeah. And then if you're not at ECCC, we are going to be recording that podcast as well.
But we'll try to.
Posting that. Yeah. That's assuming no technical issues, so.
So, no, we will not be recording that podcast.
Stay tuned, either way.
Stay tuned, yeah. We'll have more information on our social media as it becomes available. So, for Volcano Bake Meat, I'm Grant.
I'm Jessica.
I'm Paige.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Jeff.
And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Volcano Bake Meat. Join the conversation online by visiting our website, volcanobakemeat.wordpress.com, emailing us at sosimplyverygood@gmail.com, following us on Twitter at sosimplyverygood, good spelled G-U-D like a lolcat, subscribing to our subreddit, rvolcanobakemeat, following us on Facebook at Volcano Bake Meat Radio, or checking out our YouTube channel, Volcano Bake Meat. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast or review us on iTunes and Stitchers. Our opening theme is by Techne, spelled T-E-X-V-N, and you can find his work on SoundCloud. Our about page portraits were drawn by Sarah Tillery. Her art can be found at stillsart.tumblr.com, and she is open for commissions. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.